Thank you very much. That's great. I'm going to sit down today. The reason being, last time I spoke, they couldn't keep pace with me walking across the stage. So probably that was a good thing, because I've got a face that's more suited to radio than TV. But I'll try and keep in one place today. Okay, we're going to think about some of the things that we've just been reading about, and thank you, Di, for that reading. I'm really interested in this particular subject because it's really important that we need to invest in the future. But when Sammy and I were talking about this, I actually said, I'm not just going to talk about future generations, because I think it's important that we recognize that we're all in this together, however old or young we are. So forgive me if I don't necessarily just talk about future generations, because this is partly about passing the baton on. I tried to find a really humorous video clip of somebody dropping a baton in a relay race, but I thought that would probably be a bit mean, really, to do that. But we're going to be thinking about this. And I am not going to talk about all of those passages or those verses that Di so eloquently read to us today. I want us just to focus on one. Now, this is a Bible reference that's very easy to remember. 2 Timothy 2:2. So if you can't remember anything else, remember 2 Timothy 2:2. And the things you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others. So we're going to be thinking about some of those issues this morning. And I think it's really important that we do that. Why is that doing that? Oh, that's because I'm pressing the wrong button. There you go. So I want to give you a choice this morning. Assuming that I was rich enough to be able to do this, I'm going to give you two choices. Would you like me to give you £1 million a day for 31 days? Or would you prefer it if I gave you £1 on the first day and then double it every day for 31 days? I don't want you to answer the question now. Just think about it, because we'll come back to it in a few minutes. Firstly, although, I want us to just think about the Great Commission. We read in Matthew 18, verses 16 to 20. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Ever thought about that verse? That's quite an interesting verse, for me anyway, that having spent 3 years with Jesus, having seen him die on the cross, and then come back to life again, and having met with him following his resurrection, some of them still doubted. I wonder sometimes whether we're in that boat as well, that sometimes we actually think, is this really for real? I hope that we can get past that. As I say, I'm not going to talk about doubting today. I'm not even going to talk about the athlete and the farmer and the soldier that we read about either, or about the grace that God has given us that we should be strong in, or about the sufferings that we should take part in as part of what Jesus said that we would go through. But I wonder whether or not some of us still have doubts. If you have, then talk to somebody about it. Going on, it says, then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age. Magnificent promises there from Jesus that he's going to be with us. I was saying to Dave earlier on, I get really annoyed with some of the stupid expressions we come out with. You know, when we say things like, God turned up. Where the heck do we think he's been? He's always with us. He's always here. And there are lots of other ones I could rant and rage about, but I won't today. Because I want us to recognize that God is always with us and that he's always looking for our good. So the Great Commission teaches us that this is our mandate as Christians. This is what we're to do. You've heard me say in the past that the word go into all the world actually means as you are going. It's not that you have to leave home and go off somewhere else. It's as we are going into the world every day, every week. That's what the phrase is all about. It's as you are going. And there are three elements to this. Make disciples, baptize them, and teach them. Now, believing in Jesus and baptism in water are one-off events. But teaching, making disciples, is a continuous process. Just as a passing thing, if you haven't been baptized in water, may I suggest that you actually think about it? Because I think it's really important. Because that's what Jesus gave us as a mandate. And I know there will be lots of excuses and reasons why we don't want to be baptized. But I just think it's part of the Christian walk and how we become more mature. But investing time in others and relationship building is absolutely costly. It's costly in terms of time and effort and commitment. And it's a big deal. And so we're not called just to make converts. We're called to make disciples. Disciple is a follower, someone who wants to follow the person that is leading them. Now, all the way through my life, there's been a couple of things that have happened to me. When we were in our early 20s, Rosalind and I first moved to Exeter. And we lived in the centre of Exeter, and we joined ISCA Christian Fellowship, now known as ISCA Church. And I guess that was a very seminal part of our experience. When we first joined ISCA, there was one congregation, 70 people, and five home groups. 8 years later, when we left, there were five congregations, two satellite churches, over 500 people, and over 50 home groups. Now, I'd like to say that was people becoming Christians. It wasn't. There were a load of people who transferred from other churches. And it was an interesting time. The guy who started ISCA Christian Fellowship was a guy called Jack Hardwich. He was in his 60s when we first got to know him. And I guess he was the person who influenced me most of all in terms of my leadership gifting. Every Monday evening, I used to leave work in the centre of Exeter, get in the car and dash to Pinhoe. And for an hour, hour and a quarter, Jack would mentor me, alongside a lot of other people, but I had the option of one-to-one time with Jack. We'd read the Bible, we'd pray together. He'd ask me difficult questions, and I'd get some of them right and a load of them wrong, and Jack would put me right. And he took me under his wing and enabled me to grow in God. And I would say that virtually everything I learned positively about Christian leadership, I learned from Jack. Now, Jack, in turn, was being mentored by a guy called Arthur Wallace. Some of you may have heard that name. Arthur lived at Tallaton at the time, and he helped Jack grow. And Arthur was older than Jack, but Jack also had a younger mentor, a guy called Barney Coombs, who started a Christian network called Salt and Light, which ISCA is still part of. And Barney also was a great friend. I always remember Jack saying that Barney always used to talk to him while they were playing chess. And just as it was Jack's turn, he'd ask him a really difficult question, because Barney hated losing at chess. But in all that time, as I grew up in that environment, there were two areas of focus that I had. The first was making disciples, growing in faith and spiritual maturity, and equipping and releasing people into their God-given purpose. Those were the two things that Jack impressed on me in terms of what I should do as a church leader. I wasn't the church leader at the time. I had leadership roles within Iniska. I used to lead the worship, and I was a leader of a house group and part of the one of the congregational leadership team. But primarily, I was just a normal Christian person getting on with a job, trying to build a career, trying to live as a family guy. And we adopted our first child, Lucy, while we were in Exeter. And then we moved off because my career started to take off in the business I was. And it was really only, and I guess, about 15 years ago that I ended up leading a Baptist church. And I was able to put into place a whole load of these principles that I'd learned in my early 20s. And these are the two key areas that Jack impressed upon me that I needed to put into place. You know, these two things are vital. They're vital both individually and collectively. And relationship building, as I said, is costly. And if you noticed in that, in the reading that Di brought to us, Paul calls Timothy his son. Now, he wasn't his natural son, but he was his son in the faith. He was the person he was investing his life into. And we read in 2 Timothy 2:2, which you're always going to remember now, aren't you, that there's a four-generational handoff. It's all about succession planning. It's not just about those in leadership, though, although I would say to you, this is a leadership attribute. There are three scriptures which talk about this. 1 Timothy 2:3, 2 Timothy 2:24, Titus 1:9 are all about the fact that leaders in a church environment should be able to teach. But it's not just about leaders. It's about all of us, because as I said in the Great Commission, it says this is our Christian mandate, and it says that we need to teach. So what does that mean in principle, in practice? Able to teach, the Greek word is hikanos, means being competent, worthy, or qualified. And guess what? We're all qualified to a certain extent. Because what you know about your faith is important. And somebody else may know that, may not know that. And yet we've got the opportunity to be able to share it. So it's a four-generational handoff. Paul to Timothy, who should be able to teach others, who should then be able to teach others. So each generation needs to play its part. Now, the Bible's full of verses about this. One generation commends your works to another. They tell of your mighty acts, says Psalm 145, verse 4 in the NRV. The Message puts it this way. Generation after generation stands in awe of your work. Each one tells stories of your mighty acts. So it's not just about older people to younger people. It's about every generation playing its part. Now, I have greatly benefited from some young folks who, by their faith and their understanding of scriptural principles, have built into my life. As I said, Jack had both an older mentor and a younger mentor. So God's not finished with any of us yet. As long as we're breathing, we've still got a purpose in God's kingdom. But in order to be able to do this, we need to know what we believe and believe what we know. As I was praying about this morning, actually, God just impressed that upon me. Do we really know what we believe? And do we believe what we know? Do we live it out in practice? There shouldn't be any dichotomy between what we say we believe and what we do in our belief. And that's really absolutely key for us. Now, I asked you earlier on to make a choice, and I'm going to give you the answer. If I was to invest £1 million a day into your life, at the end of 31 days, you'd have £31 million. Great news. But if I gave you £1 on day one and then each day doubled the amount for 31 days, you'd end up with £2.147 billion. That's 69 times more than just having £1 million a day. Now, the problem with this is the accountants in the room, the actuaries in the room, the bankers in the room. Actually, I can only see one of us now. That's me. that was previously a banker. We know all about compounding interest. We know all about the power of multiplication. And the problem is, having £1 million a day sounds really, really attractive. But if you work out the maths, and don't worry, I have, taking £1 on the first day, £2 on the second day, by the time you get to day 20, you're going to be receiving £1 million. But then on day 21, it's £2 million, and on day 22, it's £4 million. And on day 23, it's £8 million ad infinitum, so that you end up with over £2 billion. And the problem is, we like to have our cake and eat it now, don't we? This is why investing is important. I don't know how many of you have got pension plans, but we need to save for the future. I'm not saying we should just put all our security in what we can save, but we need to actually provide for our families, etc. And putting a little bit away now will make life easier in the future. And the Bible tells us in Zechariah 4, verse 10, don't despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin. So what's this got to do with future generations? A few things I want us to think about as a takeaway. The goal of being a disciple is to make other disciples who make disciples. It's a continuous process, but it needs to start somewhere by someone. So one of the questions we need to ask ourselves is, who is my Paul? Or for ladies, who's my Pauline? Who is the person who's investing in your life? Who is the person that's investing in my life? Even now, I need people to speak into my life. Some of them may be younger than me. Some of them, as I say, have been younger than me. Remember that Paul had Barnabas to start with, to get him started. Barnabas, son of encouragement, took Paul away and for 3 years put input into his life so that he could then start his work of ministry. But the second question is, who am I discipling? So Paul had Timothy, he had Titus, he had John Mark, he had Aquila and Priscilla, who mentored a guy called Apollos. There was also Luke, who traveled with Paul. He poured his life into these guys in just the same way as Jesus poured his life into his 12 disciples, some of whom still doubted. Imagine what would have happened if Jesus hadn't set up his succession plan with the 12 disciples. when Jesus left earth, it would have stopped. Somebody poured into your life at the beginning of your Christian experience. And we need to be asking, who am I pouring my life into? I tried to think of a Timothy female word, but I couldn't think of one. But never mind. But what the Bible does say in Titus 2:4 is that older women should train younger women. So you can't get away with it, I'm afraid. It is something that we all need to be a part of. And this means we need to connect both upwards and downwards in order that we can share outwards. That's the goal. That's the outcome of what discipleship is all about. Oops, I said the word discipling, because we know that discipleship doesn't actually, isn't the word in the Bible. Never mind, making disciples is. Have you heard the expression, pay it forward? We need to give ourselves to something that's bigger than ourselves. What's going to be the legacy that we pass on? Secondly, think about our children and grandchildren. If that's the only way we actually invest in somebody, then that's great. I love this quote. Your greatest contribution in the world may not be something you do, but someone you raise. So, mums, dads, it's great. Grandparents, we've got an opportunity as well. And if you haven't got a child, why don't adopt one? I don't mean physically, legally, etc., but maybe adopt a student or something. We've got students away at university and college. We've got Reese going off to Greater Manchester Police. Why don't some of us adopt him and write to him on a regular basis so that we can impart some of the wisdom that we've got and encourage him and support him? We are never too old to invest in God's kingdom. And I would encourage us today to find somebody that we can invest in. And if you haven't got anybody, talk to Sammy. Don't talk to me these days, but talk to Sammy. Ask him to suggest. Get involved in a life group. Get involved in a home group. Get involved with other people. Build some relationships. Go to the men's prayer breakfast if you're a guy, because that's what we were doing yesterday. We're investing in people's lives. Go to reflections in the ladies' group, because that's what they do as well. They might not have as much fun as us guys, but they do an awful lot of eating as well on occasions. I'm going to get it in the neck now for that one from Rosalind, obviously. But find somebody that you can pour your life into and receive from somebody who wants to pour their life into you as well. Let's just pray together.